It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
California Wine Country with Dan Berger, brought to you by Bottle Barn. When I say she, I mean her, the she who we love, Carol Shelton from Carol Shelton Wine. Good to see you.
Good to see you too, Steve.
So, everything moving along okay, considering the mayhem?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're doing a lot of wine by pickup. We're our actual direct-to-consumer wines are up by about 40% for the year.
Wow.
And, yeah, and we aren't doing any tasting at all because we only have an indoor space. We're at a business park. How are we going to do an outdoor tasting room?
Right.
So we don't even bother. We never did open up. We never had to close down again. So we're just selling out of the back of the car. They did this fabulous video on the wine road about 50 ways to get your wine now. It was hilarious.
Oh, cool.
Absolutely hilarious.
Oh, I got to see that.
So, yeah, I'm on it.
Like, I think like the Paul Simon song?
Yeah.
50 Ways to Leave Your Lover?
Yeah, they rewrote all the words.
50 Ways to Get Your Wine. Oh, that's beautiful. Yep. You know who did it?
The guy who sang it was actually, I don't know who rewrote it, but the guy who sang it was actually Beth Costa's son, I think, or at least he acted it, she had another voice sing it.
Wow.
But yeah, and we each sang our line kind of poorly over the top of whatever he did. So mine was like, slip out, make a new plan, Stan, just listen to me,
and cool.
Point to my head, and...
Oh, I
got to
see
that. Point to the
sign
over my head that said pick up and all that. So,
all right. So, yeah, I got to check that out tonight.
Yeah.
Give us the history of your wine and winemaking and of you as an iconic figure in the wine world here.
Okay. Well, I've got 43 years now in the business. This will be my 44th harvest coming up.
Wow.
And, yeah, I was one of the first dozen women to graduate UC Davis in enology.
That's right.
Which at that time was called fermentation science, and it included beer and distillation and all other kinds of things. Pardon?
Zymergy,
yeah, exactly.
I got to tell you again to stay on your mic.
I'm sorry.
You've only been here 6 years.
Yeah, no,
turn it around so
okay.
It's facing
you. There we go.
Thank you
there
very
you
much.
Go. Thank you.
So,
I love scolding, Dan.
We all do.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So I left Davis in 78 and went to Mondavi, did research there for a season, went to Australia for a season because they're opposite seasons, so I could do a spring harvest, or what to us would have been spring. And I worked for Peter Lehman in the Barossa Valley, and he was kind of like a grouchy old version of Robert Mondavi.
He was a charming guy, though.
He was, yeah. He was German and drank like a fish and smoked like a chimney. He smoked more than you do.
My kind of guy.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, he was cool. And I lived with him and his wife and kids. And the kids are now have kids of their own because that was a long time ago. But
right.
And then I traveled around Australia, New Zealand, and everything. And I came back home and I worked for UV, United Vintners Madeira. And did research again, came up to this county finally, do real winemaking, to work at Buena Vista Winery for a year. And I was blessed then to work with Andre Chelichev, who was the great god of the California wine industry.
Yes, whose name comes up every week on the show.
Yes, exactly.
In some way, shape, or form.
He gifted us with so many things, so many improvements, so that our wines could actually stand up to be compared to Europe and beat Europe in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
So, he was fantastic. And so it was a real gift to my learning curve and my career to have worked with him. And then I went from there to the winery that became Rodney Strong. At that point, wasn't yet named that. It was Sonoma Vineyards.
That's right.
It was 1981 when I started there, and I left there in 2000, so just about 20 years, 19 and a half or so. And I became in charge of the Windsor Vineyards brand. I made wine for both brands with Rick Sayre, and then they split us up a little bit in about 1990 when the Klein family bought it. And when I inherited Windsor as a winemaking project, I inherited about 25 wines, and when I left, there were almost 50. Because
wow.
I'd get excited about something and I'd say, don't make me blend this Carignan out. Let me bottle it pure. And they go, well, I don't know. And so they'd let me bottle a little like 600 cases and whoosh, it was gone in 2 or 3 months.
I discovered Carol a long time ago when she was the winemaker for Windsor. We didn't know anything about Windsor other than the fact that you couldn't get it in the stores. You basically had to buy it by mail. and they would put you a special label on it with your name or whatever, your doctor's name. And then the wines would be entered in a wine competition, and I would be a judge, and I tasted all these wines. Every time I'd get to a Windsor wine got a gold medal, and I'd say, oh, damn, I can't write about it. It's not available in the stores. So finally Carol comes over to me and says, you can always get them by mail, you know. So that's where Carol and I got to be friends, because of the great wines she was making from some of these bizarre varieties that I never heard of until then.
You know, and I have to say, in the low to mid-80s, I got out of radio for a year or so because I was on the road with my band.
Yeah.
And when we were back, I went, oh, we're off the road for 3 weeks. I need to do something to get some money. And I wound up working with Tom Simoneau at Windsor Vineyards on the phone, selling wine around the country.
I didn't know you were there then. So was I.
I lasted 2 weeks. Because they're saying, oh, with your voice and personality, blah, 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 you'll do great. You know.
It's hard.
Oh, I couldn't sell anything. I'd get on and go, you don't want to buy wine, do you? All right. Thanks for answering the phone. See you later. You know, it only lasted 2 weeks. But anyway, that's, you know. And Simoneau is still, he's retired, but he's still working with them at home, not Windsor, but whoever is.
Yeah, whoever owns them. Vintage Wine Estates, I think.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Anyway, when did Carol Shelton Wines begin?
I left there in 2000 because I was there was this little book called Varietal Fair that used to tabulate all the medals. And every year, year after year after year, we were the top award winner. And they didn't credit it to me. It all went to the guy, you know, the winemaking team.
So. On your website, it's Carol Shelton Wines. Mm-hmm. Let me quote this. Early in her career, Carol experienced some of the resistance that many of this pioneering class of women winemakers were encountering. And then they quote you as saying, women weren't allowed to work in the cellar. We weren't considered strong enough. But I think many of us proved this conception to be dead wrong by hauling hoses, pushing around pumps, shoveling out a tank full of grapes, etc. So, yeah, because this was early on. You must have gone through a lot.
A lot of learning, especially about how to stand up for myself.
Yeah.
And body mechanics, how to use the smaller strength that I had versus a guy. And I admit I'm definitely not as strong as a guy, but I got more taste buds per square inch than a guy, so it doesn't matter.
Well, you're stronger than me. Keep that in mind.
Well, lately with your shoulder, I imagine. But I've got a little arthritis these days in my hands, so it's been a little struggle to open bottles and whatever. But
yeah, me too. That's why I told you before we went on the air that you get the greatest wine opener I've ever known. I still the only one I use at home.
Yeah.
And it's getting a little aged. So you gave me another one. These are the best, man.
Yeah, and they actually go through the TSA. You can take it on your carry-on luggage.
Really?
If anybody ever flies again.
No kidding?
Because there's no blade. It's only a pull-out little set of rollers for the foil cutter.
Yeah, which I love.
So they
the
work
foil
great.
Cutter.
If you're in Mexico and you're coming home, they'll take it away. Because they're smart enough to know that the screw is more dangerous than that little tiny... half-inch long blade.
Right.
Anyway, you know, but yeah, they did take it away from me when I left Cabo a couple years ago.
They're busy building a wall anyway. So
A wall.
We're tearing it down.
A wall of Carol Shelton wine openers.
Yeah.
Well, that there would make more sense. All right, Dan, just go ahead and talk about the great Carol Shelton.
Carol's got an insight to wine that's interesting because it starts with the very basis for what wine is all about, that's the varietal. And when I tasted Carol's wines very early on in the early 80s, I was noticing that they were textbook examples of the varietals. The varietals smelled and tasted like what they were supposed to taste like the Semillon, which you don't do anymore, but that was just such a gorgeous wine when it came out because it smelled like Semillon, tasted like Semillon. How did you do that with grapes that nobody else wanted?
It takes a lot of heart, actually. I think that really is the secret to it.
Well, that you have, my dear.
I look after them like like they're kids, and I fuss over them. And I, for what, every one wine in the bottle, there's been 50 or 60 blends that I tried on the lab table before I actually did anything in the cellar. And I mess with a lot of different things, different yeast strains. So, for instance, right now we're tasting my 18 Chardonnay, and this is grapes I knew quite well because it was, there you go.
The Chard.
The Chard.
This was a vineyard that we owned at the time. We've just barely since sold it. Oh, the cap's back on. And anyway, I barrel ferment it, and I use six.
Here, I have a wine opener for you on the screw top. I'm sorry, Carol, go ahead.
So I use six different yeast strains, and that makes a big difference because one of the things that when I left Davis, the wine microbiology professor, Ralph Kunke, swore that yeast made no difference at all. That they all it did was convert it to alcohol, and all the little flavor compounds would go away after they were in the bottle for a while. So I did this big experiment when I was at Rodney Strong with Chalk Hill Chardonnay, and I did all these rows of barrels, and each row was a different yeast strain. And one would taste like fresh French bread, one would taste like green apples, one would be very tropical, one would be buttery, and all without malolactic, just straight yeast differences. So I took them up to Davis and showed the professor, and he said, I don't know, I think they're all going to go away once you bottle them. And I brought it back bottled, and he said, well, that's because they were barrel fermented. If you do it in a tank, they're not going to have the intimate contact with the yeast. So I did it in a tank, and he said, oh, well, that's because it's white. So eventually,
it sounds like he was basically saying, it's because you're a woman.
Well, he was a pretty lenient guy. Okay. But he was very into bacteria, not yeast. So he was really into malolactic bacteria.
Dan?
Yeast strains are really a subject unto themselves, and they become really esoteric. And I happen to have a conversation with Peter Bell last week. Peter's the winemaker for Fox Run Vineyards in New York, and he was talking about the different yeast strains that they're using for Riesling. And, boy, he really went into chapter and verse, and I had to stop taking notes at some point. It's really interesting. It's a fascinating subject for those of us who are geeky.
Yeah.
Oh, and you are, sir. Mr. Yeah. Geeky Dan Lay It Down Burger. All right, let's talk about this. What year is the Chard?
18.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's all barrel fermented, but neutral French oak, so you don't get this big clobber of oak. It's not cougar juice, dare I say. As folks in the wine business like to talk about the very, very heavy old-style Chardonnay that's buttery and oaky, real heavy-duty.
Which I loved when I first started drinking Chardonnay, going from red wine, which was messing with my stomach, and I started drinking Chardonnay. And at first, you know, it was like, put a whole stick of butter in my wine my glass of wine. But now, no. No. Nah. And this 2018, Dan, it's gorgeous.
Stunning wine. It does require another 6 months in the bottle because it's so young. I mean, just it tastes fresh and youthful, but it doesn't have the secondary characteristics just yet. And that's part of the reason is the fact that it came in with a screw cap on it so that it really has had no oxygen whatsoever.
Right.
And so if you really want to drink this right now, just open the bottle, put it in a decanter, let it sit for
about hours.
Yeah, at least an hour for sure, maybe two, and then it'll open up. And don't serve it too cold because this wine's got beautiful flavors. It's really good. It's a Dry Creek area vineyard, so it's cool enough. And you just need a little bit of aeration, and you'll find that the wine opens up beautifully.
I love this.
It's gorgeous wine.
I blended in just a couple percent each of Viognier and Marsan also because they were hangers-on from the Coquille.
And this is available now?
Yes, totally. It's even in a few stores around. There's a couple of Safeways that might have it, but mostly it's at the winery. When we go in to sell Chardonnay to stores, they all kind of make a horrible face and they say, don't even show me Chardonnay because there's such an ocean of Chardonnay out there. And no buyers want to even taste it. They don't
really
want it. Yeah.
Chardonnay is just everywhere. Everybody's got it. And it's getting better. Interestingly enough, Chardonnay is better than it's ever been in terms of quality across the board. But we just have too many of them out there.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I tried to make this one walk the line between that heavy buttery style and the naked Chardonnays that have absolutely no oak. To me, those are very boring because they're very one-dimensional. They're acidic. They're often low alcohol, but they're just There's nothing there. It's alcohol, water, and acid. But here, it's actually got texture and body and flavor, and but it doesn't overwhelm you or your food.
No, not at all. And I can see at least a couple hours or so in the decanter or waiting 6 months. That I can see, Dan.
Well, I'm
Steve,
not...
Steve, lay it down, Jackson.
Here we go.
Lay what down again?
I have, unfortunately, one of my jobs is to evaluate these things when they come across the transom. And, you know, the problem is that they're too young. They're all too young. So I let them sit on the counter. At some point, Julianne tells me, get these wines off the counter. But, you know, you got to sit there for a couple of days before you can see what's going on. And it, with whites and reds and even rosés to a small degree. We got a South of France rosé came in the other day, and it was too young to drink.
No.
Go to carolshelton.com, S-H-E-L-T-O-N, carolshelton.com. Find out about her and her wines. And, of course, you have a wine club they can access there.
Absolutely.
It is California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn, Dan Berger. And today our guest is the return of Carol Shelton from Carol Shelton Wines. It's carolshelton.com. And you kind of look at me when I say this like, oh, come on. But you are an iconic figure here in wine country.
I guess so.
You are. Trust me, if I say it, it's got to be true.
Oh, that must be true.
Or not. No, with you, it's true. But, okay, so this, we tasted this Chardonnay, this 2018 Chardonnay, which was just spectacular.
Yeah.
Now, this one.
Oh,
you
meant one.
You both mentioned what it is during the break, and I couldn't.
Okay,
I have no idea.
It's Grenache Blanc primarily with Roussanne and Marsanne, the two varieties that come from the Rhone Valley. Both of those are almost subtle aromatically. We'd call them subtle. And Grenache Blanc gives you this minerality. And, of course, there's a little Viognier in here, which gives it also, which is a very flowery, almost floral component.
I'm getting flowery here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But it's all of part of a piece. This wine is so young, needs a lot of air or a lot of time in the bottle, because what happens is that these wines really pick up a textural thing. And Carol didn't want to use too much oak in this wine, because otherwise you start to cover up some of the subtlety. So talk mm-hmm. a little bit about that.
Okay, it's called Coquille Blanc, and coquille is the French word for scallops or shellfish, so it goes very well with that. It's a tribute to the soils in Paso Robles.
Give me some clams and oysters, and I'm ready.
Yeah, you got it. It's a tribute to the soils in Paso Robles because it was once under ancient oceans, so there's a lot of shell material. That means that the soil is calcareous, and it's very similar.
Calcareous.
Yeah, calcium.
All right.
You know?
Oh,
calcium.
A lot of calcium in it.
Of course.
Yeah, limestone and
I was
going to
throw a geek alert, but I don't need to.
And so we liken it very much to the soils in the Rhone, and I bring the grapes up. It's not a, it's a big pain in the ass, actually, but, oh, can I say that in the air?
Yes, you may. I say ass all the time.
Okay. I bring the Roussanne and the Viognier up first because they're ripening first, and it's actually hard to keep the Roussanne from getting overripe, so by the time I get it, it's deeply peachy, honeyed. And it is the component that allows it to age and get this honeyed aromatic character. But the Grenache Blanc is the last thing I pick, and it is steely even after being on the vine for another month. It has very high acidity. You know, as things hang on the vine, usually their acid drops, and that's kind of what I'm waiting for. But by the time I bring the second load up a month later, it's still acidic. But I need it to be dominant because it's the backbone of the blend. It's like a spine and the bones, the skeleton, and
gotcha.
Then the Roussanne is the flesh.
Nice.
And then the Viognier.
Well put.
The Viognier, that's the little hairdo on top.
Dan, explain to me why I like this.
Well, it's a little teeny bit like Chardonnay, but only because it has that beautiful long finish, that long texture.
Very long.
But the aromatics,
and I get the peachy thing, too.
The peachy thing is really part of why this wine exists, but the other part of it is this minerality, which is in the aftertaste as well as in the mid-palate. What's really nice is it just works so beautifully with seafood. Just think about fresh sole, not old soul. Fresh soul.
Like us, old souls.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah.
It's my all-time favorite wine of any wine I've ever produced, and I've been making it since 08, and the 2008 tastes dynamite right now. So yeah, that's 12 years old, and it's hanging in there beautifully. But you have to be patient, and it tastes really good now. The Wine Spectator has taken a liking to it. Last year, they gave the 17 vintage of it 93 points and top 100 wines in the country.
Nice.
It was number 41, so I finally made it to the top 50. But it's my third time of being in the top 100 wines.
Mike, will you go down to the clam cellar downstairs and bring us some steamed clams? Because that would go perfect with this.
Yeah, it would.
God, that's good.
I make a really good rock shrimp soup. It's lemongrass infused broth with ginger in it, and then you strain out the ginger and onion in the broth, and you just put raw rock shrimp or scallops in the bottom of the bowl and pour this scalding hot infused broth over the top.
And so therefore the scallops only get cooked by the temperature of the broth.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Really yummy. So it's good with anything seafood, but anything Asian, with anything spicy.
Sure.
And it's crispy but creamy at the same time because of the high acidity and the fleshiness. So you've got creaminess that'll stand up to like a lemon piccata sauce, and you've got crispness that'll allow it to go with fat, creamy sauces or brie cheeses or something like that. It's a very, very versatile wine. It's really
2018 fun. Again?
2018.
Yeah. Okay. There are a lot of white Rhone blends out there. This is probably the best.
Thank you.
It's just wonderful.
Wow, thanks.
Go to Carol Shelton, S-H-E-L-T-O-N, carolshelton.com. You got to try some of these amazing wines.
So coming up, just a little heads up, in about 6 months, we're going to be releasing the first Coquille Rouge, and that will be all red Rhone varieties, and they're from Oakley, down by Antioch and Brentwood.
Yeah.
Oakley is nothing but sand.
Yeah. So the vines are own-rooted. Let me just give myself a little bit.
Oh, go ahead.
All the way over. There you go. You can take it from him now.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're having some rosé now. But anyway, that's going to come out around October, I believe. And it's a whole new package for us, a new label, a new bottle, a new foil, everything. And it's going to be fun to see how people react. And we'll release it at the same time, hopefully, as the 19 Coquille Blanc. So we'll be
out. Hi, Louie. Go say hi to Carol. Louie, he's our...
Oh, what a sweetheart.
He's our dog.
A little white puffball.
Yeah. So talk about the rosé here.
Yeah, what you have now is the Wild Thing Rendezvous Rosé, and we only fairly recently put it under the Wild Thing label, I guess about 2014 or so. But it used to just be called Rendezvous Rosé because it was the wine of choice when Mitch and I had our Come to Jesus business meetings, and it was the lowest alcohol thing that I produced so that the tempers wouldn't get as heated. So we would have our business rendezvous over dry rosé. And I make it from Carignan grapes that are organically grown up in Mendocino. And I leave them on the skins. I pick it for rosé at lower sugar, and then I leave them on the skins for 2.5 days. And that the morning of the third day, we start bleeding off juice. We don't take all of it. We take about 50% of the free-run juice. That's the rosé. The other 50% stays in the skins, ferments red, and goes in the next wine, the Wild Things Inn. So they're brother, son, sister, moon.
This is one of the most delightful rosés you'll ever drink, and the reason is that it reminds me of the very first rosés that I ever drank back in the 70s, and it was before stainless steel was being used in Provence. So they were basically making very, very, very light red wine, and this is very light red wine made as a rosé. It's stunning, and it's absolutely quaffable to the point you have to have two bottles for two people.
I'll agree with that. On a very hot day,
I'll drink to that.
I make ahi poke at home, and we're confirmed ahi poke eaters. And we have a big bowl of ahi poke set on ice between the two of us, and each of us has our bottle of rosé on ice.
Ahi poke?
This is one bottle per person.
Isn't that a Japanese cartoon?
No.
What is that? What is ahi poke?
It's tuna tartare.
Oh, ahi.
Yeah.
I missed that.
So I make it unspicy. I cannot handle spice. I'm a real wuss. So it's got sesame oil and what's called ponzu, which is citrusy soy sauce, and green onion, lime, avocado. If I have them, some nectarines, something like that. Oh, yum. It's so good.
And this has... What's the alcohol level in this? It's
only about 13.3.
13.3
is low. 13.3, yeah. Okay. So it's, and I can brag again, the 2007 version of this was in the top 100 wines as well.
Nice.
The prior year, and I think it was like number 77 or something. And then the third time I was in the top 100 was with the Wild Things Inn, its big brother, a couple of years before that, and it was number 78 or something.
And talk about Wild Thing, which we have before when you've been in, but you've
which
got
you will
these
have next.
Wild Thing wines.
Yeah, so the Wild Thing,
you gotta love that.
It's named for the wild yeast fermentation that I use on the Zin only. I don't wild yeast ferment the rosé and all of the Chardonnay, mostly because I want to keep the fruit and capture the almost crystalline strawberry watermelon of the rosé fruit. Is that would not be there. Wild yeast tend to make things very homogeneous, round, creamy, toasty, heavy. I don't want that in my rosé.
Right.
So, and in my Chardonnay, about 25 or 30% of it is wild yeast, but the rest of it isn't because I want all those differences from all the other yeast strains as well. But the Wild Thing Zin, that's our signature wine that we're most known for.
Right.
It's everywhere. It's in On by the Glass once we get restaurants back. it's been in Russian River Brewing and Hop Monk and... I was in the unfortunately closed now Pampoche. It was everywhere, and that's our pays our bills.
Mike, any word from Barry Herbst? Can you call him? Send somebody over to grab him and tell him to get to the phone.
Jeez. Was he supposed to be here too?
Well, they got him so busy and everything so incredibly insane, obviously, but.
Well, especially after the competition that just ended, everybody wants the wines, which actually I brought to two of our golds.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well?
Well?
Pour away, my dear.
Okay. So we have Wild Things in. This 2017 got 94 points and a gold medal.
Wow.
And this is fairly new out there. I think it's been released about 3 months. We're 25% of the way through it, even though those 3 months have all been during pandemic times. And the other wine that I brought is going to be its sort of cousin from the same vintage, same vineyard, but it's a barrel selection. And it got Best Zin at the Press Democrats North Coast Wine Challenge. And I got 99 points with a double gold. Really fun. I got a crow about 99 points, yeah.
That's a thing.
Cox Reserve. It's Cox Vineyard, and it's named in honor of Jack Cox, who passed away in about 2016, I believe. And I bottled up a wine in honor of him because he was a big influence on me and a mentor as I was starting out on my own. So,
yeah.
He'd be proud. And
that's
his family
delicious.
Still owns it, so once they hear about it, they will be too.
Okay, Dan.
Where did the fruit come from for the Wild Things Inn?
It's the Cox Vineyard, and it's just north of Ukiah on the west side of 101. So technically it's Redwood Valley, but I'd say 90% of Redwood Valley's on the east side of 101.
Yes.
And it's more of a fog pocket. So this ripens 2 weeks earlier than Redwood Valley, which is why I don't call it Redwood Valley. I just call it Mendocino County.
And that area is very cool, actually. It's surprisingly cool for Redwood Valley.
Yeah.
You have mentioned Mendocino County grapes a couple times, mm-hmm. so obviously you're a fan, and you utilize some of their stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very underappreciated area, and it reminds me of the way that Sonoma was in relation to Napa probably about 20 years ago.
Okay.
When I came to this county, we were fighting like, me too, don't forget Sonoma. And they would, these stupid journalists from out of town would write things like...
it's all Napa for them.
Yeah, well, they would write things like, you know, bylines, Napa Valley. Oh, in Sonoma County, da-da-da-da-da-da. And we're like, wait a minute.
Well, that has changed, thankfully.
Yes. So now, unfortunately, Mendocino's in the same position.
Right.
And they've made themselves sexier in a marketing way by making things organic. So that's one of the niches, is they have a lot more organic vineyards. Sonoma's going for sustainable, and there's a whole big fat binder, I swear it's about 4 or 5 inches thick, on how to become certified sustainable.
Well,
Organic is a little different.
Every other week we have Carissa Cruz from Sonoma County Wine Growers, and you have seen the Lazy Susan that they made for us.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't notice her in the middle.
Yeah. But Sonoma County now, you know, it used to be years and years ago when I was here, it would be, now Sonoma County has been chosen as of last year as the number one wine destination in the world, Sonoma County.
Yeah. Awesome.
I'm sure that pissed Napa off. off.
Well, and part of
but we love Napa.
What Napa does is a different thing. That's a very targeted experience. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much all Cabernet Sauvignon, and Sonoma County is not all one grape variety.
Yeah, there's little pockets of very good Zin in Napa. I love the Bialy Zins and stuff, but they're a microcosm of what all of Napa is. It's just, they're probably 2% of what Napa does, and their dollars are coming in from the Cabernet.
But this is a really interesting wine, this 2017 Wild Thing Zin. There's a nice wild spice component. It's hard to identify which specific spice it is, but it reminds me just a trace of Thai basil. But then there's also violets and cranberries.
Yeah, I get violets out of this a lot.
And that violet component is going to get stronger as time goes by. Right now the wine is just a little bit young, and it was screw capped, so it is not had any air at all. And she just opened the wine, so
it's been in bottle for a year. So
not
a year
enough,
and 2 months.
Not
yeah.
enough time.
All right, but what about you know, putting it in the whatchamacallit thing?
Decanter.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It would help a lot. The problem,
but it needs more than just a couple hours in a decanter.
I'm the wrong guy to ask about Zinfandel because I drink them when they're 10 years old. I love them when they're 10. I think a good 10-year-old Zinfandel is nothing like it. And we've had so many wonderful experiences with them when they're 10 years old. And when I drink them at 3 and 4, people say, "Oh, they're old." And I didn't know that they're not there yet.
So. No, I've been making now Zin under my own label for 20 years, and we tasted the 2000 Rocky Reserve and the 2000 Munga Zin. They're beautiful. That's 20-year-old Zin.
Yeah.
But it has to be made in a style to be aged.
Well, this one's got the acidity to go, and I think that's the secret to these wines. If they have low acidity, they're not going to age. This one has good acidity.
And they need to have lower alcohol. If they're much over 15, it just tastes like jet fuel in about 10 years.
Yeah, slap you in the face. Yeah, I hate that.
It's really raw and coarse and astringent. Yeah.
This one is tough to drink all by itself. You start to imagine, you can drink a glass of it, yeah, but you really want some food with this because the acidity is really there to go as a counterpoint with something, and it doesn't have, right in the studio, it's fun to drink, but it's not really what it's aimed for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it needs some nice barbecue.
Hey, Mike, get down to the barbecue cellar in the basement, will you? Bring up some clams and barbecue.
I'll try the other one.
Yeah.
All right.
We need you to bring us some barbecue, Mike.
He's got it all.
Yep.
He can do anything.
Just Arthur Bryant's out of Kansas City.
Yeah.
While they're pouring here, I must, in case you haven't followed this, Donald Trump gave warm wishes to former Jeffrey Epstein associate charged with sex trafficking. He said a couple times yesterday, "Oh, I just wish her well." Good Lord. Sorry, I shouldn't have gone off on that tangent, because now I've been enjoying this segment, and now I'm depressed again. But, okay. It is Carol Shelton Wines, carolshelton.com. You need to contact her and, you know, go to the website is what I'm saying.
Yeah, or give us a call.
Yeah, check it out. These wines are amazing. And I was, explain again where you are, how you're doing this.
We're in a business park on Coffee Lane. We're about a about a block north of Piner. Mm-hmm. So some of Coffee, you know, is on the south side of Piner. But up in our business park, there's actually 5 wineries and Moonlight Brewing.
Right.
And 2 churches, one of whom is teetotaling, which is rather interesting for coexistence with our neighbors. But we have a very synergistic thing. If somebody runs out of something or your forklift dies, you just go next door and borrow it from somebody else. So it works out really well. And we're the only one. We're kind of the anchor. And now we aren't open at all except for pickups. But we will be again, hopefully not too far off.
So if they go to carolshelton.com, mm-hmm. They can check out all your wines, yep. Join the wine club, and then learn how to pick up some wines.
Yep, exactly.
Over there. Yeah.
Yeah, and our prices are very fair. The Chardonnay is 18, the Rosé is 15, or
wow.
Oh, sorry, 17. We just raised it to 17 after the big win in the top 100. The Wild Thing Zin is 19. And the Coquille Blanc is 24, and the Cox Reserve is 28.
Extremely reasonable prices.
Thanks. Yeah, I want people to drink it. I don't want to collect it. Wines are to sell and enjoy. So, and we're also kind of planning on a big move up to Windsor. We bought a property that is 2 parcels west of the Russian River Brewing building on Mitchell Lane. And
beautiful.
Gandhi. Yeah. So we will be building, hopefully breaking ground this winter. And we're in the planning process with the town of Windsor right now. And it's going to be a real show place, a lot of hospitality space, event space. And we might even have our residence up on top because we lost our house in the Tubbs fire. So
we're trying to
recoup our losses and sell that house now that it's rebuilt, use the money to build the winery, and then move into the winery.
But the winemaking place in basically Coffee Park was not affected by the Tubbs fire, but your home was.
No. When we fled our house, we actually went to the winery and had to drive through the Coffee Lane evacuation traffic because we didn't know it was there.
Oh,
we wouldn't have headed that way if we'd known that they were on fire too. And then we stood and watched Coffee Park burn for 5 hours. And finally, there was this massive explosion about 6 o'clock. And my husband was sound asleep, and I woke him up and said, "We're out of here. We got to go." And it turned out it was the gun shop up on Range and Piner.
Oh, geez.
And all the ammunition had gone up, but the fire department was ready for it. They knocked it off and stopped the fire. But if they had not made a stand, the whole fire team, at the school there at San Miguel, Schaefer Elementary, they said, "We can't let the fire go south of this road," and it didn't. It blew a little bit to the west, and then it stopped. And
what they did
us.
During the Kincaid fire a couple of years later, they saved Windsor and Healdsburg, for
That's
God's
right.
sake.
Oh. Yeah. And possibly the rest of West County as well.
Yeah,
It was planned. The fire
it was
had
going to the coast
all the way through, yep.
Yeah. It is California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn. Dan Berger, of course. And it's so great to have Carol Shelton back in the studio. Go to carolshelton.com. Check out these amazing wines. And maybe even get a wine opener. My favorite wine opener in the history of my life is the Carol Shelton wine opener, and she brought me a new one.
That's so cool. Big claim to fame. Wow.
Great to see you.